It is 11 a.m. So 11 a.m. in Toronto, Canada, but 6 p.m. in Eretz Yisrael, where Rabbi Shvat is waiting to give part three of his series on religious Zionism. On behalf of Torah Moshe, I want to welcome everybody. It's a pleasure to welcome back Rabbi Shvat. And Vakasha, let's get started.
Shalom to everybody. Today we're going to discuss as one of the major differences between a religious Zionism and secular Zionism, why Eretz Yisrael? We're not going to talk today about Uganda. That we'll talk about in a later shiur. But the question is, what is special about the land of Israel that makes it holy, that makes religious Zionists see the importance of the land of Israel? What we're going to do, Bezrat Hashem, hopefully we'll see, 8 different points today, and we'll start right with the sources. So let's do the share screen, and here we go. Okay. One point that at first doesn't seem to sound connected with our topic is the Chafetz Chaim in source number 3. The Chafetz Chaim, towards the end of his magnum opus, he wrote a lot of books, but his name, the Chafetz Chaim, comes from his book on the prohibition of talking Lashon Hara, of speaking bad about other people. And at the end of the book, he deals with the question why he dedicated so much time to this mitzvah. V'af anu nomar b'inyanenu, d'lefi zmanenu b'avonotenu harabim. Says, unfortunately, in our generation, unfortunately because of our many sins, shehufkar etzel eza anashim ligamrei avon Lashon Hara rochilut. There are many people, even if they're Shabbat observant, they may eat kosher, but they still talk Lashon Hara. Has anybody met anybody who's religious but talks Lashon Hara? It's more difficult to find somebody the opposite, who is religious and doesn't talk Lashon Hara. So that the Chafetz Chaim says, "Im echad yitchazek tamid be'inyan shmirat alashon." If a person goes out of his way to be careful, davka to observe this mitzvah, which other people are neglecting, shelo lavor al avon lashon hara urchilut, kama miaschar yagia lo al yedei zeh. Imagine how much of a reward this person gets. Dalo yadua uma shekatu b'sefer charedim. It's brought in the Sefer Charedim, but it's interesting. This is also found in the Sefer Chasidim of Rabbi Yehuda Chasid. My educated guess is that there was a typo here, because you all know that if there are two sources, you're supposed to quote the earlier source. And say Rabbi Yehuda Chasid was about 300 years before Sefer Charedim. Anyway, it's found in both books that it says, "De mitzvah she'in ledorshin, he commit mitzvah." If there's a mitzvah that's unpopular, that people don't want to do the mitzvah, it's like a mate mitzvah. Let's remember, what is a mate mitzvah? In Sefer Bamidbar, it talks about a person who's walking in the middle of nowhere, the middle of the desert, and he sees a dead body. Now, the halacha is that you leave everything else that you're doing, even if you're a Kohen and you're not allowed to come in contact with a dead body, even if you're a Nazir, who's also not allowed to come in contact with a dead body. The Gemara says, even if you're a Kohen and a Nazir on your way to giving Korban Pesach, you leave it all and you bury the dead person. Why? This is the classic example of mitzvah she'i efshar la'asota yedei achirim, a mitzvah that there's nobody else around to do. There's no chevra kaddish around. You have to be the one to bury the dead person. Says the Chafetz Chaim, just like there's this concept of meit mitzvah, there's a concept of mitzvah meita, a dead mitzvah that people are neglecting. So if you see a mitzvah like this, says the Chafetz Chaim regarding Lashon Hara, there are so many Orthodox people who are neglecting the mitzvah of Lashon Hara. Redof acharei la'asota. That is what we should concentrate on. Mitnei she'amitzvah mekatreged ve'omeret kama grua anochi shenitalamti mikol v'chol. The mitzvah, as if it were, says, what, I'm so bad, nobody wants to observe me? And that's why we call the Chafetz Chaim the Chafetz Chaim. He single-handedly revived this mitzvah. I don't know if everybody realizes what an accomplishment the Chafetz Chaim did. Because in the Shas, there's no Masechet Chafetz Shmirat HaLashon. There are no law, there's no Masechet tractate on the laws of talking bad about people. There is no Hilchot Lashon Hara of the Rambam. What the Chafetz Chaim did is he amassed hundreds of sources, taking a line from this Gemara, and a Rambam from Hilchot Sarat, and a Rambam from Hilchot Deot, and a Shulchan Aruch here, Rabbeinu Yonah from, and he amassed a 300-page book and single-handedly brought Lashon Hara onto the agenda. And even though today there is still, unfortunately, we still hear people talking Lashon Hara, but at least you'll hear rabbis talking about the problem that we talk about talking Lashon Hara. In other words, it's on the agenda today. And all of that is due to the Chafetz Chaim. I give another example. Has anybody ever heard of Mikveh Max? Max Schreiber, one of my idols. As soon as I heard about him, he became one of my idols. He saw in the 1950s that the mitzvah of mikveh was being terribly neglected in North America. There are even tshuvot. It's interesting. Professor Chaim Soloveitchik says that one of the best ways of learning history about a period is from the shoot, from the halachic responsa. See what questions are asked. So on this topic, somebody asked Rav Moshe Feinstein about the pgam. As brought down in the Shulchan Aruch, you all know that you're not allowed to marry a mamzer, a child who was born to a mother who had an affair with another man. You're not allowed, a regular Jew is not allowed to marry that mamzer. What if parents did not observe family purity? That is called ben hanida and is considered a pgam. And the Shulchan Aruch says it's better not to marry someone like that. If anybody has heard in the Haredi community that many people don't want to marry Balei Tshuva, it's based on this idea. So a yeshiva boy in the 1950s asked Rav Moshe Feinstein, he says, I have a problem. Because all the girls that I go out with, if I ask them if their parents observe family purity, the answer is no. So who am I supposed to marry? In other words, we see that it was a really serious problem in the 1950s. I know even growing up in Riverdale, New York, there was no mikveh in Riverdale. We had 5 Orthodox shuls and a kosher pizza and an eruv, but the mikveh only came later. And Max Schreiber saw this very problematic situation. And he said, I am willing to help fund any community who wants to build a mikveh. I mentioned him once in a lecture in Tel Aviv. And at the end of the lecture, a young woman comes up to me and says, I didn't realize my grandfather was so famous, even here in Israel. I said, who's your grandfather? She said, you mentioned he's one of your idols, Max Schreiber. So I took the opportunity. I asked her, I always wondered, how many mikvahs did your grandfather build? And we'll deal with the questions at the end. And this young woman says that when he passed away, they wrote emails to all the Orthodox communities in North America. She said more than 40 communities said that Max Schreiber built their mikveh for them. Now, the Chafetz Chaim, Max Schreiber, took these mitzvot, which were being neglected, and brought them back onto the agenda. And that's my first point regarding Eretz Yisrael in our generation. For 1900 years, it really wasn't practical to live in the land of Israel. And it's a difficult mitzvah, and to this day, there are 500,000 or so Orthodox Jews that observe Kashrut and are Shomrei Shabbat, but don't live in the land of Israel. And that is one of the reasons why we have to speak about the importance, because for 1900 years, it wasn't doable. And it's important to get it back on the agenda. But point number two is that it's not just another mitzvah. Chazal tell us in source four, in the Sifrei. Maybe we'll just point out that Sifrei is the Midrash Halacha on Sefer Sfarim Bamidbar and Dvarim. Why is that important to point out? Because these are the same Tanaim that wrote the Mishnah, and the Midrash Halacha is just like the Mishnah. It's just that it is not according to topic in the Shisha Sidrei Mishnah, but it is set up according to the Psukim. So it's the oral law on the Psukim. And here we see in source number four, Maaseh Rabbi Yehuda ben Betera, Rabbi Matya ben Charash, Rabbi Hananya ben Achi, Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Yonatan, a group of Tanaim who lived about 50 years after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, about the year 120 CE. So these Tanaim, Chayu Yotzim Chutz La'aretz, they were on their way to Babylon. You have to remember, throughout the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, most of the Jews stayed in Babylon. They didn't come on Aliyah. Only 42,000 came with Ezra and Nehemiah. And especially, how much more so, after the destruction of the second temple, where the economy was shot, and there was famine in the land. So these rabbis also were going on their way to join the rest of the Jews in Babylon. Vigil leflatom, they came to the city in Lebanon, right over the border, vizachru et Eretz Yisrael, and all of a sudden it hit them, hey, we have left the Holy Land. Zakfu inehem, they looked up to the heavens, zalgu dimotehem, they started crying, vikaru vigdehem, they tore their clothing, they started going crazy, vikaru et amikra hazeh, they remembered this pasuk, virishtem ota vishavtem ba, ushmartim la'asot et kol ha'chukim ha'ele. You shall inherit the land and settle it and observe all of these mitzvot. Chazru uvaulim komam. These rabbis who were on their way to Bavel did a 180-degree turn and returned to Eretz Yisrael. Amru, and they declared, and here's the punchline, Yeshivat Eretz Yisrael shkula keneged kol ha'mitzvot shebat Torah. That living in Israel is equated with the rest of the mitzvot put together. So this is point number two. Now, if you combine point number one and point number two, that if a mitzvah for 1900 years was neglected, so we have to speak about it, but kal v'chomer, if it is a super mitzvah that is equated with the rest of the mitzvot put together, that's heavy. I remember when I learned the Sifrei for the first time, I was 20, 21, and there was an international Ve'ida, convention of B'nai Akiva, for students all over the world in Yerushalayim. And they brought in Rav Shlomo Gorin, who is the chief rabbi at the time. And he gave us a talk. And as part of the talk, he mentioned this Sifrei, that as students who were considering making Aliyah, he said, you should definitely live in Israel. It is a mitzvah equated with the rest of the mitzvot put together. Now, I immediately thought that there are other mitzvot which are also equated with the rest of the mitzvot put together, right? If you think about it, we know Talmud Torah keneged kulam. Learning Torah is equated with the rest of the mitzvot put together. Shabbat is equated with the rest of the mitzvot put together. Avodah Zarah, not to serve idols, is equated with the rest of the mitzvot put together. Well, somebody asked us Sifrei. I already mentioned that Sifrei is Midrash Halacha. It's not, quote unquote, just a Midrash. When people say just a Midrash, that is referring to Midrash Agadah. That's Yalkut Shimoni, Midrash Tanhuma, Midrash Rabbah. Sifrei is a halachic Midrash. It's like Bechilta, Sifra, Torat Kohanim, and Sifrei. Anyway, what are we talking about? Oh, that's the problem when I deal with questions in the middle. Oh, so I wanted to ask Rav Gorin if a little tzutzik like me can think of three other mitzvot that are equated with the rest of the mitzvot put together. That really raises two questions. First of all, mathematically, how can you have two mitzvot which are equated with the rest of the mitzvot? Right? If X equals 612 mitzvot, You cannot have one of the other 612 also equal 612. Doesn't work out. That was question number one. Question number two was, if I knew of three mitzvot that are equated with the rest of the mitzvot put together, there must be a lot. So I raised my hand, and Rav Goren did not call on me. So I lowered my hand, but that's not the end of the story. I raised my hand again. All of you probably know this phenomena that a question is bothering you so much that you can't concentrate on what are you saying. And he still didn't call on me. And I must have looked confused, but I raised my hand a third time. And then Rav Goren said to me, "Kin Bachur, yes, young man, what did you want to say?" And I asked him my two questions. I asked him, okay, you say, Chazal say, living in Israel is equated with the rest of the mitzvot put together. But so is learning Torah, so is Shabbat, so is learning Avodah Zarah. How does that work out mathematically? And not only that, apparently it's not such a big deal if Chazal used this term regarding a lot of mitzvot. And Rav Goren, he goes like this. There was silence for about 5-6 seconds. And then he said to me in Hebrew, Lamata Omer Harbe, why do you say a lot? Just seven. In fact, Rabbi Kelman is correct. What are the seven? By the way, when I first bought the Bar Ilan Taklitor, the CD-ROM with 40,000 rabbinic books on it, that was the first she'ilta, the first question that I checked. So see, Rav Goren, you know, they have the chess master against the computer. And Rav Goren said there were seven mitzvot equated with the rest of the mitzvot put together. And I checked it out. Enter all the different possibilities. And 33 answers came out. So I was disappointed. But then when I went over the 33 different sources, I saw that they were constantly referring to the same seven mitzvot. Do you all realize what Rav Goren did during those 5 or 6 seconds? Anyway, what are the seven? So they're the three that I mentioned, learning Torah, Shabbat is equated with the rest of the mitzvot, not doing Avodah Zarah, because I'll say that in Masechet Avodah Zarah in the context of the original students of Yeshu. The original Christians were religious Jews, but Chazal say you could be doing all the mitzvot, but if you believe in a trinity, it's not worth anything because Avodah Zarah is equated with the rest of the mitzvot put together. Rabbi Kalman added tzitzit. Also Brit Milah, that's number five. Number six is tzedakah. And number seven is living in the land of Israel. And what Rav Goren explained is that, look at this list. These are not just regular mitzvot. These are super mitzvot that have halacha clout to them, right? The minimum of Judaism, even Reform Jews do Brit Milah, right? Even Reform Jews give tzedakah. Shmirat Shabbat. Living in Israel is in that unique category, and that's point number two. That Chazal are telling us it's not just another mitzvah, but it is a mitzvah which is equated with the rest of the mitzvot put together. Now, I'll mention, why is it significant that this story happened about the year 120 CE after the destruction of the Second Temple? Because very often there's somebody who thinks and asks the question, living in Israel is important when there's a Beit HaMikdash. But after the temple was destroyed, maybe it's not so important. That's why it's important to stress that the Sifrei is referring to after the temple was destroyed. And nevertheless, the rabbis turned around and came back to the land of Israel. But our topic for today, the main topic, is why. It's not enough just to say, this is important. Why is it important? So let's look together quickly in source 11. I brought for you, there's a famous Mishnah in Masechet Ketuvot, but I brought for you from the Shulchan Aruch, so that you should see that it's also brought down la halacha. There are diyunim there are different issues regarding where a couple should live. The bottom line is a man cannot force his wife to move where she doesn't want to live. The wife cannot force the man to live where he doesn't want to live. And nevertheless, one of the Yotzim min haklal, one of the exceptions, source 11. B'medvarim amurim, that they can't force each other, michutz laretz lichutz laretz, or mi'eretz Yisrael, eretz Yisrael. Say, for example, a girl is from Chicago and the husband is from New York. And she, when they get married, she wants to live near her mother. And he does not want to live near her mother. Neither of them can force the other. Aval, michutz laretz le'eretz Yisrael, kofin otal la'alot. And the poskim say it is the opposite as well. She can force her husband to come on aliyah with her. And if he doesn't want to, a beit din forces him to give her a get. Afilu minavei yafel inavei ara. Even if they have a beautiful house in chutz la'aretz and all they can afford in Israel is a little caravan, afilu mimakom sherubo Yisrael umakom sherubo ovdei kochavim. Even if they're living in a religious community outside of the land of Israel, and one of the spouses wants to live in a non-Jewish community in the land of Israel, right? For 1900 years, most of the people in the land of Israel were not Jewish. Nevertheless, this is one of the few cases that a woman can basically divorce her husband. Why? Because living in Israel is such an important idea. And even though Shalom Bayit, we don't want to break up a marriage for anything, and Chazal are not saying to take divorce lightly, nevertheless, they are saying that living in the land of Israel is very important. There's another Tosefta, just to give one more example. You know what? Let's see. How are we doing time-wise? You know what? Let's already get into the why. Well, maybe we'll see one more example. Rav Tzuyuda Cook in Source 12. Many of you remember that the question of giving land for peace, when Yasser Arafat said that he was going to be a Baal Tshuva, and if we give him what he wants, parts of the land of Israel, he will stop terror. Now, we all know the end of the story, but at the time, there were those who said, maybe we should give peace a chance. And most of the rabbis in Israel, Rav Avadya Yosef was against the stream, but so was Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. But most of the rabbis in Israel said you cannot give away land for peace. And somebody asked Rav Tzviuda Cook, why is that? Right, usually we say pikuach nefesh, saving even one life, supersedes all the other mitzvot, right? We drive in the ambulance on Shabbat to give birth. We eat if the doctor tells us that we need to eat on Yom Kippur. So how is it possible that if we can get peace in exchange for the land of Israel, why don't we go for peace? Rav Tzviuda answered as follows. She'ela, source number 12. Be'inyan shleimut eretz Yisrael, ha'im ein litchashev b'matzavei pikuach nefesh. If it will actually save lives, maybe we should do it. I'll already say parenthetically that this sugya is much longer than just one source, but nevertheless, Rav Tzviuda is sharpening the clout of the importance of Eretz Yisrael here very well. Rav Tzviuda Cook answered, Pikuach nefesh kayam b'chol milchama. Danger is part of every war that ever was, especially since God stopped doing supernatural miracles already in Megillat Esther 1500 years ago, and already in the book of Shoftim and in the book of Melachim, Kings. The wars are not miraculous anymore. So when you go to war, you are endangering soldiers. And so is the case when the Torah commands us to conquer the land of Israel, to liberate the land of Israel. That means that we are endangering soldiers. How can we endanger soldiers to conquer the land of Israel? Ratzia goes on to say, this is the only mitzvah that we actually charge a cannon, and if need be, give our lives in order to observe. Because even the three cardinal sins, Gilui Arayot, Shpichut Damim, and Avodah Zarah, that is adultery, idolatry, and murder, those three cardinal sins, which supersede saving life, right? We all remember the story of Chana and her seven sons in Chanukah. And they gave their lives rather than bow down to an idol. But even then, the first priority is to avoid the situation. You don't go up to a goy and say, hey, I'm not going to bow down to your idol. Kill me. But you try and run away. As a matter of fact, Chazal asked regarding Mordechai. You remember in the story of the Megillah that Mordechai does not bow down to Haman. And the question is, what are all the other rabbis doing? What all the other rabbis bow down to Haman? Chazal tell us no. If they saw Haman coming, they crossed the street. They went the other way. They avoided the situation. The same thing with adultery. The same thing with idolatry. The same thing with murder. You do anything you can to get out of the situation. But Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook says there is only one mitzvah that you charge the cannon, even if you know they're going to be murdered, killed on your side, and that is for the sake of conquering Eretz Yisrael. So now the question is, why? Why is it equated to the rest of the mitzvot? Why does it supersede so many other mitzvot? I think we're going to suggest six different answers. The first answer, I think, is the most obvious. Maybe I'll throw out the question to you. When Chazal say, Talmud Torah keneged kulam, learning Torah is also equated with the rest of the mitzvot. Why? How do you understand that phrase? Any suggestions? Why is learning Torah equated with the rest of the mitzvot? So the most common explanation is because when you learn Torah, it enables me to do the other mitzvot, right? If I don't learn how to put on tefillin, if I don't learn the laws of lulav and etrog, I don't have an ice cube's chance in hell of guessing them, right? You cannot guess the laws of tefillin. So that is why learning Torah is equated with the rest of the mitzvot, because it enables me to do the rest of the mitzvot. The Torah Tmima says that is also the first explanation regarding the importance of Eretz Yisrael. Let's see it inside. The Torah Tmima in source 13. You all heard of the Torah Tmima, classic work on who combines the oral law and the written law. He's the son of the Aruch HaShulchan, Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein. And he writes on this Sifrei, Lo nidba'er ta'am davar zeh. Chazal don't explain why living in Israel is such an important mitzvah. What does it mean that it's equated with the rest of the mitzvot put together? V'yitachen lomar. It would make sense to suggest. Mishum debichlal I efshar likayem kol ha-mitzvot kulan shebatorah rak be'eretz Yisrael. Because the quantity of mitzvot is so much greater in the land of Israel. If we think, what mitzvot can we do only in the land of Israel? So, first thought is the agricultural mitzvot. Mitzvot tatliot ba'aretz. If you think about truma, maaser, bikurim, leket, shikra, peyah, etc., etc. I don't know if anybody ever counted them. There are 58 agricultural mitzvot, which can only be done in the land of Israel. That's a lot. That's almost 10%. Now, today, we don't have the Beit HaMikdash, but there are many national mitzvot that can only be done in the land of Israel. As a matter of fact, the Maharal of Prague in source 14, he says it explicitly that Rov mitzvot haTorah tluyot ba'aretz. That most of the mitzvot in the Torah can only be done in the land of Israel. I actually once counted, and I came up with 315 of the 613 mitzvot can only be done in the land of Israel. Now, if you think about it, again, we're talking about the agricultural mitzvot, national mitzvot, like serving in the army, like speaking Hebrew. Theoretically, you could speak Hebrew anywhere in the world, but it's not going to happen. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about that, that it's really only practical to fulfill the mitzvah of speaking Hebrew in Eretz Yisrael. We saw last time the Chatam Sofer, who says that when you go to work in Eretz Yisrael, you can plant a tree in the land of Israel, sweep a floor, even making your bed. Any constructive act in the land of Israel is a mitzvah asei midoraita. So when you go to an 8-hour workday in the land of Israel, that is 8 hours of mitzvah. Some of you may know, and the Mishnah Berurah actually brings us down lahalacha, that there is a mitzvah to walk 4 steps in the land of Israel. So walking, talking, working is a mitzvah. The Sefer Charidim, Source 15, he says, V'chatav Rambam b'minyan taryag mitzvot yeshivat Eretz Yisrael kol et varega she'adam be'eretz Yisrael hu mikayem ha'mitzvah zu. Every single second that we are in the land of Israel, we are observing another mitzvah and another mitzvah and another mitzvah and another mitzvah. The Vilna Gaon, by the way, points out that there is only one other mitzvah in the Torah that you can fulfill even in your sleep. It's a good trivia question. Even if a person is in a coma, what 2 mitzvot can a person in a coma fulfill? Any suggestions? It's a difficult trivia question. Sorry? That's a low tase. That's a negative mitzvah. Okay. All the negative mitzvot, you just sit and do anything, and you... We're talking about mitzvot tase. Correct.
Mitzvah.
Right. Rabbi Kelman says sukkah. And the Vilna Gaon learns this out from the pasuk, Vayihi b'shalem suko ume'ono b'tzion. That the only 2 mitzvot that a person does with his whole body, even if you're asleep, even if you're in a coma, every second you're in a sukkah, you are doing a mitzvah d'oraita. Similarly, every second you are in Eretz Yisrael, like we just saw in the Sefer Charedim, you're doing a mitzvah. Now, can you imagine if you are in a sukkah in Eretz Yisrael? Bing, 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 bing. Every second you are doing 2 mitzvot. Now, obviously, mitzvot, the issue is not the quantity, but somewhere along the line, we do know that the more mitzvot that we can do, the better. To summarize, the Torah Tamima says, why is living in Israel such a unique mitzvah equated with the rest of the mitzvot? Because it brings you a greater quantity of mitzvot, much more mitzvot. Now, most of you have learned enough about life to know that whenever you hear the word quantity, it's just a matter of minutes before you hear the word quality. And that is the explanation of the Ramban. Let's see the Ramban inside in Source 16, where he says that living in Israel enables me a greater quality of mitzvah. Now, this Ramban, it's based on the Sifrei. Most people know it from the Ramban. That's why I brought it from the Ramban, Surah 16. Minayinyan hazeh amru b'sifrei. Again, what is sifrei? Midrash halacha. It's halachic midrash. On the pasuk va'varetem mehira. That if Am Yisrael, if the people of Israel sin, and the prophets warn us, and we still don't do tshuva, God eventually is going to exile us to the diaspora. And then it says, after we're in the diaspora, ukshartam lo'ot ayedchem, put the tefillin on your hand and on your head, put a mezuzah on your door, even when you're in diaspora. What does that mean, even while we're in diaspora? Explain, Chazal, af al pi she'ani magle etchem min ha'aretz lechutz la'aretz, even though I am exiling you from the land of Israel to the diaspora, Heyu mitsuyanim b'mitzvot. Continue observing the mitzvot, even when you're outside of the land. She'kishetachzeru lo yu aleichem chadashim. So that when you come back to Israel, you won't be out of practice. Mashal la'adon. In the original, in the Sifrei, it says melech, a king. She'ka'as al ishto. He was angry at his wife, at the queen. V'shalcha lebeit avia. He said, get out of here. Go back to your father's home. Amarla, but he said, nevertheless, hevei mitkashetet tachshitim. You should continue adorning yourself, dressing and acting like a queen. She'kishet tachziri, so that when you come back to the palace, lo yu alai chadashim. They won't be new to you. You won't be out of practice. I remember Rabbi Jonathan Sacks once said that before he met the Queen of England for the first time, they gave him a whole long protocol that he had to read and sign. Different things that when you're speaking to the Queen of England, for example, you're not allowed to start a discussion. You have to wait for her to discuss. In other words, there's a certain way that a queen is expected to act. She doesn't walk around in her bathrobe, her hair curlers, or slippers. She has to dress like a queen. Continues the Sifrei. What's this? You know, we'll deal with the comments at the end. It's easier that way. What is the idea of mitzvot in Chutz Laaretz, so that we shouldn't be out of practice? By the way, the Chafetz Chaim said, don't ask me where he got this from, but I'm sure he has a source. For years I've been looking for his source, that mitzvot in Chutz Laaretz are worth 5%, 1/20th of the real mitzvah. In other words, this mezuzah that I have on my door, theoretically, if I were to put it on a door outside of the land of Israel, it's only worth 5% of the mitzvah. And that's the Chafetz Chaim. And to summarize this second explanation, why is living in the land of Israel so important? Because not only does it give a greater quantity of mitzvot, but also a greater quality of mitzvot. And by the way, we'll just mention in source 17, this is really this idea is actually found in the Torah itself, that the mitzvot are meant to be done in the land of Israel. In source 17, I brought for you two psukim from Dvarim Perakei. Ve'ata po amodi madi. Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe, you stand here with me. Vadabra elecha et kol amitzvah v'chukim v'mishpatim. And I will teach you all of the statutes, the commandments, asher tilamdeim, that you should teach Israel, va'asu ba'aretz asher anochi noten lem l'rishta, that they should do in the land that I am about to give you to inherit. In other words, the mitzvot I'm giving you to do in the land. Similarly, v'zot ha'mitzvah chukim v'mishpatim asher tzivah Hashem Elokeichem l'lamed etchem la'asot ba'aretz asher atem omrim shama l'rishta. Similar idea. By the way, I know not everybody was at the end of last class when we were doing questions and answers and comments, but I mentioned after the end of last week's lecture that an interesting idea that the other side of the Jordan is always the eastern side of the Jordan. Even when Reuven, Gad, and Menashe are on the eastern side, they refer to that, and Moshe refers to it, and Yoshua refers to it as the other side of the Jordan, because the Torah is worded for somebody who is living in the land of Israel, on the western side of the Jordan. In other words, and also we mentioned Yama Vakedma Tzafona Vanegba, right? That west is called Yama because in the land of Israel, the sea is west. Negba, the Negev, means south, because it's in the south. In other words, that's what the Ramban is saying, that all of the mitzvot, even mitzvot that we can do outside of the land of Israel, it's not the same quality. Now we get to point number three. This is my favorite proof, and I must confess, a personal confession. The next sentence is what convinced me when I was 17 years old to make Aliyah. The Rivash, one of the great Rishonim of Spain, was asked this question. Let's see it inside. Source 18. The Rivash was asked, why is the mitzvah of living in the land of Israel on a higher level than other mitzvot? Like we saw, it supersedes Shalom Bayit. It even supersedes saving your life. Why is it on a higher level? Why is it equated to the rest of the mitzvot? The Rivash says as follows. Watch this closely. Aval Yishuv Eretz Yisrael eina mitzvah l'sha'ata. Source 18. Living in the land of Israel is not just a mitzvah, a temporary mitzvah. Usually when you do a mitzvah, you pick up a lulav and etrog. After 10 seconds, you put it down and you're finished. You put on tefillin. After a half hour, you take them off. You're finished. You hear a shofar for to your 30 kolot. Takes about 5 minutes. After 5 minutes, you're finished. Most mitzvot are finished as soon as you finish them. They're not forever. Ela mitzvot. When you live in the land of Israel, it is a mitzvah mitkayemet lo'olami. It is a mitzvah that is forever. U'mitzvah v'to'eleti l'chol Yisrael. And it's not just for you, but it's for all of Israel. I'll explain. Tekef. She'lo tishtaka eretz kedosha biyad tme'im. That the land of Israel should be in the hands of Jews and not in the hands of the Gentiles. Ve'ein l'meidim mimena l'shar mitzvot. And that is why you cannot, even though very often, Chazal, our rabbis, our sages, learn from one mitzvah to another mitzvah. If it says this by Pesach, so it's that by Sukkot. The klal is you cannot learn anything from the mitzvah of living in Israel because it's on a higher level. The Rivash says why. I'll explain. I'll give an example. Most of you probably heard of Yosef Trumpeldor, the one-armed hero. He was one of the original settlers in Tel Chai. What was Tel Chai? Tel Chai, it's easy to remember the story. There were 18-year-olds, Chai, who they read the map politically. And they saw that there was going to be some kind of partition plan that where there are Jewish settlements, that will be the Jewish state. The Balfour Declaration will be implemented there. Where there are no Jews, that will be the Arab state, what eventually was called Transjordan. These 18-year-olds and their leader, Yosef Trumpeldor, had a very ingenious idea. They said, why don't we set up a Jewish settlement as far north as possible? So that from that point on and south and down, that's all going to be part of the Jewish state. It's a good idea, right? So why was everybody against it? Ben-Gurion was against it. Even Jabotinsky, who was the leader of Beitar, of these young idealistic chalutzim, they said, you're crazy. It's suicide. You can't settle a settlement so far away from everyone else. Because if the Arabs attack you, we can't send reinforcements. You're sitting ducks. But as often idealistic 18-year-olds will do, just like these 18-year-olds did not listen to their parents who told them not to make Aliyah, they did not listen to the establishment, and they went and they settled up at Tel Chai, which is the northern part of the, what's called Etzba HaGalil, the Galilee Panhandle. To make a long story short, in fact, Jabotinsky, Ben-Gurion were right. Arabs came, and in one day, they killed 8 of the 18 teenagers. Now, all of us have lost friends. Can you imagine losing not one friend, not two friends, not three, 8 of your best friends? You have to remember, they were living together. They were eating, working together 24/7. 8 of the 18 friends were killed in one shot, including Yosef Trumpeldor. But those 18-year-olds did not break. And they brought more friends to settle Tel Chai. Eventually, they built another settlement in memory of their eight friends named Kiryat Shmona. Has anybody heard of Kiryat Shmona? It's the largest city up in the Galilee Panhandle. And these 18-year-olds, they were the ones who carved out the map of the land of Israel. The borders of the state of Israel were decided by 18-year-olds. Now, when these kids went to settle up in Tel Chai, why did they go there? They didn't go because there's a nice view. They didn't go there because there's good farming land. They went there, like the Rivash says here, in the name of Am Yisrael. When they settled there, they actually were the ones who decided the future map of the land of Israel. So they were not just doing it for themselves. They were doing it for all of Israel and for all generations. Do you all see the two? There are two directions here that the Rivash is saying. That when a person settles the land of Israel, if you buy land in the land of Israel, it's going to stay in Jewish hands and it'll be in your great-great-grandchildren's hands as well. It's not just for you, it's for all of the Jews and for all the generations. And like I said before, I still remember the Madrich who told me this Rivash, and it hit me just at the right moment. I was a 17-year-old, and the famous movie, I Was a Rebel Without a Cause. I wanted to do something significant in life. I didn't want just to live and die and be another social security number. I wanted to leave my mark on the world. And, you know, that's normal for a 17, 18-year-old. But I was looking, how is there anything that I can do that will have ramifications 500 years from now? Right? If I learn Torah and I am super religious, my children can decide not to be religious, or my grandchildren, or my great, right? No matter what mitzvah I am doing, it's temporary and it doesn't have ramifications. But the Rivash is telling me, when you make aliyah and you move your family tree to its final destination, you are making history. My mother, Baruch Hashem, has more than 100 children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren in the land of Israel. Theoretically, one of the great-grandchildren can decide they want to move back to America. But the odds are that you're going to be, and for sure, the vast majority are going to be in the land of Israel. And that is a historic decision that has ramifications even 500 years from now. Or if I'll put it this way, every person who makes aliyah is going down in history, because every person who's going to be around in Yemot HaMashiach is going to have one great-great-great-grandfather or great-great-grandmother who had the guts to make aliyah, move the family tree to its final resting place, and this is where we are for eternity. And as a 17-year-old, I said to myself, that's for me. And that's why I made aliyah. And the Rivash says that is why living in Israel is in a higher category than other mitzvot. Because other mitzvot, they're for me. It doesn't affect a Jew in Australia. And other mitzvot is for my generation. It doesn't affect my great-great-great-grandchildren. But when you buy land in the land of Israel, by the way, even if somebody, for whatever reason, technically cannot live in the land of Israel, when you buy an apartment in the land of Israel, that also is moving that chunk of real estate to Jewish hands, to your family's hands, and that also is a historic statement. So that's explanation number three, why it is so important to live in the land of Israel. Number four, let us look at the Chatam Sofer. The Chatam Sofer, we all know, is a super heavyweight. And he deals here with a question. We don't have time to get off on a tangent, but it's a famous question. Many of those who count the 613 mitzvot don't count it as one of the mitzvot. The Ramban does, for example. The Ramban doesn't. On the other hand, the Rambam says, "Le'olam yadur adam beretz Yisrael." Every Jew should always live in the land of Israel. So why doesn't the Rambam count it as one of the 613 mitzvot? The Chatam Sofer writes as follows, source number 23. V'gama Rambam, even the Rambam, who does not count it as a mitzvah taseh to live in the land of Israel, even though he says a person should always live in the land of Israel, so why doesn't he count it as a mitzvah? Mipnei kedusha sheba. The Chatam Sofer says it's not just a mitzvah. Can you imagine living on a planet where the apples are holy, the rocks are holy, the language is holy, the money is called Shekel HaKodesh, the language is called Lashon HaKodesh. Even, it's interesting, the Rambam, who we all know is usually very rational, one of the places where you could just see his emotion pour out, as he says that the greatest of rabbis would go to the land of Israel and kiss the rocks and roll in the ground and hug the land of Israel. Bekitzur, the Chatam Sofer says, what's special about living in the land of Israel is you're living in a planet of holiness. It's not just another mitzvah. It's living where you breathe the air of holiness, rocks are holy, etc. That's point number four. Point number five is Rav Kook. Rav Kook in source number 19 starts out similar like we just did, like the Torah Tamima, that just like learning Torah is equated with the rest of the mitzvot, so too is living in the land of Israel. But, says Rav Kook, Eretz Yisrael domeh leTalmud Torah. VeTalmud Torah, source 19, af al pi shu mevi lidei ha-mitzvot kulan. Yes, it's true that learning Torah enables me a greater quantity and a greater quality of mitzvot. But chas v'shalom, goes on Rav Kook to say, we're running out of time, so we'll do with this orally. Rav Kook says, chas v'shalom, to say that that's the whole importance of learning Torah. What? When we get to Sefer Vayikra, which isn't practical anymore, we skip it? There are many halachot which are not practical. When a woman learns man's mitzvot or a man learns woman's mitzvot, it's still considered equated with the rest of the mitzvot because learning Torah in unto itself is equated with the rest of the mitzvot. Goes on Rav Kook, and at the end of source 19, says the same thing with the land of Israel. We all remember Yaakov Avinu's last wish, Yosef's last wish, Moshe Rabbeinu's last wish was even to be buried in the land of Israel. Now, if the importance of being in Israel, like the Torah Tamima said, is to do more mitzvot, all right, they all lived before the Torah was given, Yaakov and Yosef. Not only that, when you're dead, you can't do any mitzvot. Rav Kook says that our relationship with Eretz Yisrael, yes, it brings holiness, and yes, it brings a greater quantity and a quality of mitzvot, and yes, it's for Am Yisrael for all generations. But that is not the point. The point is that we have a love affair with the land of Israel. And even during the generations when the land of Israel wasn't so beautiful, even when she was in the hands of Goyim, even when it was not the Torah center of the world, we still love the land of Israel. I remember as a kid, I once read a biography of Roy Campanella, who was a catcher of the Brooklyn and Los Angeles Dodgers. And at the height of his career, he was in a serious car accident, was paralyzed from his neck down. And even worse, his wife left him. He ended up marrying his physical therapist. And in his biography, he writes that the good thing that came out of the car accident was it showed me what is love and what isn't love. He said, my first wife, she did not love me, but she loved the idea of being married to a famous all-star baseball player. And as soon as I was a paraplegic, she left me. That's not love. My second wife, physical therapist, she loved me. This is what Chazal call Ava Eina Tluya Badavar. True love is not dependent on this or that. So too says Rav Kook, our love with the land of Israel is not dependent on the fact that it brings a lot of mitzvot. Because you know what? Today, many of those mitzvot we can't do. And still we love the land of Israel. The Rashba, we don't have time to see it inside, in source 20, the Rashba asks a more basic question. Why are most of the mitzvot given to be done in the land of Israel? Why is the real quality 20 times greater of all mitzvot in the land of Israel? Why? Kacha. Because we love the land of Israel. It's the chosen land. And that is point number 5. The final point, and this is Rav Charlap. Again, we'll do a quick review of what we saw. We've seen 7 points till now. The question was, why is it important to speak about Israel, living in Israel? Point number 1 is because for 1900 years it was neglected. So we have to bring it back on the agenda. Point number 2, we saw it's not just another mitzvah. It's a super mitzvah equated with the rest of the mitzvot. We then asked, what does that mean? And we've seen 5 explanations. Number 1, the Torah Tumimah says, because living in Israel brings me a greater quantity of mitzvah. The Ramban says it brings a greater quality of mitzvah. The Rivash says that living in Israel is a national mitzvah for all Jews and in all generations. The Chatam Sofer says, because living in Israel, you're enveloped totally in Kedusha. Rav Kook says all that is true, but that's not the reason why we love Eretz Yisrael. We love Eretz Yisrael because we love Eretz Yisrael. The final reason is Rav Charlap. Rav Charlap was the Rav of Shaarei Chesed before Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, and he writes in Source 25 as follows. We're running out of time. We'll just do this orally. Rav Charlap writes, it's a Kabbalistic idea that every generation, no, it's so beautiful. We'll see it quickly inside. No, we won't. Every generation has the mitzvah of the generation. How do you know what your mitzvah of your generation is? Look at what the goyim are trying to take away. The Netivot Shalom brings this down also. It's a famous Kabbalistic idea. For example, during the time of the Romans outlawed learning Torah. So that becomes Yareg Val Yavor. Because the goyim are as if it were shlichim, messengers from God, to help us focus on that mitzvah. During the time of the Maccabees, the Greeks outlawed Kiddush HaChodesh. Don't make a Jewish calendar. Well, that was a sign that that is the mitzvah of the generation. Rav Charlap goes on to say, look at what is the only mitzvah that the goyim are trying to prevent in our generation. All right, with the fall of the Soviet Union, there's freedom of religion even in Russia. The Iranians, they don't care if Jews put on tefillin. Iranians don't care if we learn Torah. Iranians don't care if we do Brit Milah. The only thing that bothers the Iranians is the Zionist entity in the land of Israel. And that's why they want to nuke us. You go to the United Nations, and there are so many decisions against the Jewish people in the land of Israel. They like Jews. Some of my best friends are Jews. But they have a problem with the Jewish state in the land of Israel. Says Rav Charlap, that is a sign. If this is the mitzvah that the goyim are focusing on, that's a sign that this is a mitzvah that we should focus on. Because in our generation, our Father in heaven is calling us to come home. And just like the Jews came on Aliyah, the first Aliyah, the socialist Aliyah before the Holocaust, after the Holocaust, the Sephardic countries from the Soviet Union, Ethiopia, today from France. Apparently, most of the Jews in the world today already live in the land of Israel for the first time in 3,000 years since the exile of the 10 tribes. Says Rav Charlap, in our generation, the generation of Kibbutz Galiot, the ingathering of the exiles, that is the mitzvah of the generation. And that's a special reason in our generation, a special zchut, in addition to everything that applies in all generations. Any questions or comments? I will be happy.
Okay, do you want me to feed you the questions or you want to read them yourself?
If you can feed me, that'll be good. because I don't have my glasses.
Okay, here. That's fine. Okay, so I mentioned yesterday, okay, just let me get to the beginning. We spoke about Lashon Hara. That was Daniel Feldman's, Rabbi Feldman's show yesterday. That's it. 500,000 Jews outside of Eretz Yisrael who keep kosher and Shabbos. I don't know. It's probably a little more than 500,000, but okay. I don't think that what he was.
That's, doing. I think if we're
taking a census,
but
if you count all the all, I mean, just in the Sutmer community, there's a couple hundred. That's not important, but yes. And,
if anybody wants the exact number, look at the Pew study, P-E-W. You can Google online.
But also, like what you said, I don't think we're quite at the majority of the Jewish people who are living in Israel. We're, of course, at the point where more Jews live in Israel than anywhere else in the world. But we're only we're at about, 45% according to
Professor Sergio Della Pergola.
Mm-hmm.
Did this come up last week?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mentioned this last week. That originally you said that the turning point was going to be the year 2030. And then about 15 years ago, he moved it up to 2020. But
I don't think we're quite there yet. Of course, when we're there, I don't know what we're going to do. But, halachically, of course, you'll add that into the shiur when you give the shiur in 5 years about Yovel will have to start and Shemitah maybe Doraita. And then how will that affect the Heter Mechira? It's going to have a lot of implication in theory, because there are many halachot of the Torah that only apply when the majority of the Jewish people
right. Well, the Rambam says that it's mainly when we're going to settle according to Shvatim by
20. Yeah, I understand that. Okay, that's a technicality. Maybe we'll get around that. Otherwise, we're going to never know who the Shvatim is. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, of course. But I just point, it's still a milestone when 50% of Jews, when considering in 1948, 5% of Jews lived in Israel, 600,000 out of, whatever, even after the post losing, 6 million, still only about 5% lived in Israel. Okay, I was just pointing out, since I wrote it, that Rav Moshe, of course, one of his strangest reasoning, but of course he allows with absolutely no hesitation to marry a Bala Tshuva, and in many ways it's a higher mitzvah. Somebody comes back to
That was the answer. You know what?
Right. I know you didn't focus on the answer. I know. I just threw that in. I don't want people leaving that people should think there's something wrong with marrying a Bala Tshuva. God forbid, it's perhaps even a greater mitzvah.
Thank you so much. I apologize for leaving out.
I point out, if those who are familiar with the Tshuva, his logic is really, I don't want to say it's incomprehensible. Who am I to say Rav Moshe's logic is incomprehensible? But it doesn't. You read it and you'll see it. It's not. It doesn't flow, but it doesn't matter. It was a way for him to get to the answer that he needed to get to. Anyway,
basically what Rav Moshe Feinstein says there.
Oh, you're going to bring it up. Okay.
He says, "Do yourself a favor and don't ask your mother if she went to the mikveh either, because you probably have the same situation."
Okay. See, for you mentioned this, a midrash halacha, of course. Tzitzit, yes. No, okay. One spouse can force the other to move teilat. Oh, that's sent to me. But of course, yeah, I did want to point that. I think I sent it to you privately. Not everybody, or many poskim say that bizman hazeh, the halacha forcing a wife or husband to move to Israel is no longer applicable. If I remember correctly, Rav Schechter, I remember in Shir quoted, I believe, Rav Shlomo Kluger, who says these halachas in Gemara, you can divorce your wife, if she doesn't want to move to Israel and not pay her, are not applicable today. We can discuss afterwards why he says that. Maybe others say it is.
I know the chief rabbinate has dealt with it, and it's brought in the Shulchan Aruch. So there are many.
No, of course,
many,
it's brought in the Shulchan Aruch. But I'm saying we all know that we don't always follow exactly. That's why there's so many commentaries in the Shulchan Aruch. We just follow the Shulchan Aruch. We didn't need any commentary.
I know what the rabbinate does is that if they feel that a husband or a wife is doing this as an excuse to get rid of their spouse.
Yeah, well, that's what Rav Shlomo Kluger says, basically, if I remember correctly.
He says there are so many easier reasons to divorce your wife anyway. You don't need that one.
I didn't quite hear what you said. I'm sorry.
You're better off.
Okay, no, what I was going to say is that if I remember correctly, Rav Schechter told us, if I remember correctly, he said, divorce your wife is really a sin. The Torah allows it, but it's a very negative thing. It has to happen sometimes. What can you do, unfortunately?
For sure.
So
the point
have to be 100% lishma in order to do it. I'm such a tzaddik, I want to live in Israel. And he felt that today, come on, give me a break. It's an excuse, as kind of what the chief rabbi is saying. We don't feel that people are, it's not worth it. It's not worth it today to enter in that ceremony, whatever. But I really don't think it really happens to us. Okay. I was going to get divorced. I mean, yeah, I don't think it. I hope it doesn't happen too much.
No, the point is, Chazal are not saying that it's good to be divorced.
I understand. It's the importance of Eretz Yisrael. Your theoretical point is very well taken. I was just saying on a practical level, may not apply anymore. I sent to you privately, if I can mention, Rav Tzvi Hudas Cook's view that Pikuach Nefesh doesn't apply to Eretz Yisrael, of course, as you know, is based on the Menachem Chinuch, but many disagree. Rav Soloveitchik, I guess the school I come from, we disagree with that. What can I say? Rav Soloveitchik, of course, said you give up Yerushalayim to save one Jewish life, and that was the view you alluded to, Rav Lichtenstein held by, and Rav Avad Yosef, etc. So that's a machloket, but just again, if I may.
Again, the point was to show the halachic clout.
100%. That's my job here. What can I do? You know? Okay.
I'm just very upset. There's one thing that I know a lot of people think it's chutzpahdik to say, but I think it's chutzpahdik or I don't understand how a rabbi in Chutz La'aretz can make a decision about a couple in Dalia because this being in Chutz La'aretz, one is problematic in that status.
Yeah, I totally agree that. And questions relating to Israel should be paskened by Israeli rabbanim, and questions related to Chutz La'aretz should be paskened by American rabbanim, which is why it's a problem the chief rabbinate gets involved in conversions in Chutz La'aretz. They shouldn't get involved in that either. That's also a huge problem. But here, when we're talking about an issue of divorce, that's not related to Eretz Yisrael. In other words, you're discussing, should one divorce your spouse because they want to make aliyah? I don't think that's a question only for Eretz Yisrael poskim. That's a question.
As you sit in Toronto and I sit in Shiloh, we see it very differently.
Okay, that's fine. The Seder. Okay, I agree with you. Okay, let's see. Any other questions? Thank you for sharing your story. Rabbi, about you making Aliyah, you weren't quite 18. You made it only at 17, but okay. Yes, I'm not trying, God forbid, to downplay Aliyah. I'm just trying to point out that, halachically, these are not always black and white issues. There's a lot of gray to some of these issues. That's all I was pointing out. More Jews do live in Israel diaspora. I don't think that's true, but I can stand corrected, okay? Are the majority of Jews under 25 or 20? Some of these messages went to me directly. Yeah, that would be very nice. If the younger Jews are looking at it, that probably is very true, that more younger Jews, I don't know. Okay, people, thank you. Probably no more than 4 minutes. Yeah, that's another question. How do you count Jews in America? You know, halachically, and it works both ways because you have people who are identified very Jewish who aren't halachically Jewish. Are they counted? And if you don't want to count them, what about the Jews who are halachically Jewish but don't even know they're Jewish because their great grandmother was Jewish, mother, and they're Episcopalian? So, you know, it's very difficult to know who's how you count Jews. That's
why the Chazon Ish also says regarding the question that Rabbi Kelman raised before. He says there has to be an official declaration that most of the Jews in the world are in the land of Israel, and who's going to make that declaration? That might also delay the chalut of biat kulchem. But that's the Chazon Ish's also approach because it's hard to figure out the.
Yeah, very hard to figure out. And what you mentioned about the mitzvah of our time, so that I heard that the Meshach Chachma says in non-Kabbalistic terminology, when he discusses the Midrashim and why the Jews were taken out of Egypt, we didn't change our name, the various Midrashim closed, and knew that's not a mitzvah in the Torah. There's no mitzvah in the Torah. Rav Moshe has a whole shaila about that. You know, they have to have a Jewish name. But, you know, I'm Jay.
Maybe we'll mention that next week.
And Rav Moshe says that's not in the Chumash. Only before we left Egypt was that a mitzvah. After we left Egypt, we have tzitzis, tefillin, Shabbos. It's very nice. And the Meshach Chachma points out, because in every generation, there are historically important mitzvot.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry?
Okay.
No, if you want to say something, that's fine. Just one at a time.
I apologize.
No, it's okay. So he says in every generation, there's mitzvot. So in Egypt for slaves, it was very important. They had a Magen David. They spoke Hebrew. They had the culture of being Jewish. And Rav Schechter, of course, then says in his famous article, which I'm sure you've read about mitzvot Yishuv Aretz, pinched in the first RJJ journal about 40 years ago, about the mitzvah of living in Israel today, that the mitzvah of this generation, this every generation has been mentioned, of course, is Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, but he doesn't tie it into anti-Semitism, etc. Anyways, but you want to point, how can a chutzlarz paskin on Aliyah? Actually, when I think about it now, on Aliyah, only a chutzlarz rabbi should paskin, because Aliyah means somebody living in chutzlarz going to Israel. So if you want to be very technical, I remember once when I was a rabbi here in Toronto in a shul for 9 years. So whenever somebody know their daughter made Aliyah, so she sent me a shayla about eating gelatin in Israel, because here the COR doesn't rely on it there. I told her, listen, you live in Israel, get yourself an Israeli posek. Even though I don't think kashrut is so much about Israel, but still where you live, get an Israeli posek. It's very important. But certain issues are meta-national, or whatever the word is. It go beyond that. So I don't, it's not that, you know, as it's totally geographical, but depends what the question is. But I think a question, should a kid make aliyah against his parents, should be answered dafka by the North American rabbi and not by the Israeli rabbi. By the rabbi who knows the situation. I would actually argue that quite strongly, that an Israeli Rosh Yeshiva, Rebbe in the yeshiva has no right to tell a kid who doesn't know his parents the situation. Only the rabbi of the shul who knows the family, that's Paskin and Shaila, you have to know the family, the art. So that I will, if I'm sorry, but I will express my opinion that on that issue, Dafka, but Dafka only Rabbanim and Chutzlar should Paskin. Maybe Rabbi Schwartfield, I'm sure he probably doesn't agree with me, but Beseder, that's wonderful.
Well, we could have a class on it another time.
Okay, yeah, I'm happy. Listen, that's the danger. Whenever the speakers ask me to feed them the questions, it gives me more chance to give my editorial comments. But I think it's great. Listen, I'm a big believer. We express Eilu Veilu Divrei Elohim Chayim. We express opinions, and we can sometimes not agree, and Beseder, it's all Torah. Okay.
Rabbi Kalman, may I say something?
Absolutely. First of all,
I wanted to say I apologize for opening my mouth when I didn't realize that I wasn't on mute. I apologize, excuse me.
Thank you very much
for hosting this class amongst all the rest that I attend. And I wonder if, Rabbi Schwartz, if your email was available for those of us who would like to be in touch with you?
Yeah, sure. If you want,
you can email me if you're uncomfortable. I only give out email addresses, of course, with direct permission of the teachers. Normally, when I get emails, I BCC the teacher. But if Rabbi Schwartz wants to share his email,
no problem.
Bakasha.
arishvat@gmail.com.
That was easy. Thank you.
And the Shvat is spelled Shvat. No, because there's the Chutz Laaretz spelling and the Eretz Yisrael spelling. We had this whole discussion. That's in America, it was spelled differently.
Okay. arishvat@gmail.com.
Okay. All right. Any other comments or questions, please? We like when people, you know, feel free to disagree, express your opinion. As I always tell my students, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. They're just not entitled to their own facts. But anyways, okay, that's an important point sometimes. Opinions, Beseder. Facts, that's there's Emmet and Sheker when facts. Okay, this evening, I'm sorry?
I just wanted to raise a question about the difference between Poskim Gdolim, Rabbanei Ador, Rabbanei Eretz Yisrael Gdolim, and a personal decision that is Psak Halacha Shel Aseh Lecha Rav, the family. How does one get a Psak Halacha Prati? So I believe that we should learn to distinguish whether we are looking for a Psak Halacha on a personal level in the context where one is living and one is leading his or her life, and respecting the leadership of Am Yisrael, and instead of constantly saying there are Rabbanei Israel that know about Israel, Geonei Ador know about Chutz La'aretz as well. And a person like Rabbi Schwartz that made Aliyah knows Gola and knows Eretz Israel, Rabbi Lichtenstein, or Rabbanei Ador Bechlal. So I believe that for Am Yisrael, we should look forward to respecting the leadership of Rabbanei Am Yisrael, Gdolim Bechul veGdolim beYisrael, and they should be able to discuss halachot. in principle and not on a personal level.
Rabbi, you want to comment?
I hope within our lifetime we'll be zochet to see the Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Masechet Megillah, Daf Yud Zayin, says that the Anshei Knesset Agdolah set up the order of the brachot according to the order of redemption, starting with the ninth bracha. Whereas the ninth bracha is, we daven for rain that the land of Israel should flourish. That's the first stage of redemption. Afterwards is the bracha of Tikka B'Shofar, that we ask that Hashem should bring all the Jews back to the land of Israel, which is also taking place, Baruch Hashem, as we said before. But a lot of people don't realize that the next step is Hashiva Shofteinu Kivarishona, to revive the Sanhedrin. And there are so many important issues which have to be decided that only a body with broad shoulders and we're the greatest Rabbanim are not always looking over their shoulder to see what everyone else is saying. Yeah, we hopefully will have the Sanhedrin. And just like the first two stages were difficult to implement, Sanhedrin isn't going to come easy, but the Rambam writes how we will revive it. And that is the framework that Tova is referring to.
The first shiur I ever heard from Rav Aaron Lichtenstein when I was in the Gris Kollel, we learned Masechet Sanhedrin. And the first shiur was on, it was about Eretz Yisrael, the difference between the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael for the purposes of mitzvot of Tluyot Ba'aretz. And I said, you know, Eretz Yisrael doesn't have one definition. Then Rav Lichtenstein gave a whole shiur about that. And then he talked about the Chidusha Sanhedrin, reviving the Sanhedrin. So I'm holding here a book by Yehuda Lev Maimon, the first minister of religion of the state of Israel, quite an interesting person, wrote this Sarei Hamea, six-volume work about his interaction with rabbis. And he has a 75-page book. He was a Talmud Chacham. He wasn't a Gadol B'Yisrael, but he was a serious Torah scholar. It's actually 105 pages, now that I look at it, about why we should reestablish a Sanhedrin today. We're come back to the land of Israel, then we have to establish a Sanhedrin. And as, of course, you know, the Brisker Rav then put Heichal Shlomo into Cherem. And I had a cousin who wouldn't walk into Heichal Shlomo because Heichal Shlomo was going to be the seat of the Sanhedrin. And how dare they make a Sanhedrin. And just like in the 16th century, Rav Yaakov Beirav and the whole Machloket Sanhedrin. So it ain't happening so fast, but I agree. It would be very nice to have a Sanhedrin. But Tova, if I can say in the middle, Aseh Lecha Rav. I always point out the key word is Lecha. Aseh Lecha Rav. You have to have a rabbi who knows you. It's got to be your rabbi. It's got to be competent and qualified and not arrogant.
Rabbi Kelman, that's exactly what I wrote in comments. There is a difference between
and national issues, right, 100%. So you choose your rabbi. The rabbi can't choose you. In other words, you're not bound by any rabbinic position. With the apps in the Sanhedrin, no rabbi can force you to follow his view. There's no such thing. You pick your rabbi. You have to pick a rabbi, a Selech HaRab. But once you have a rabbi, I don't have to care what some rabbi says. He's not my rabbi. I don't mean to disparage that, but in other words, you have your poskim. Clearly, the way of Rav Soloveitchik and the way of Rav Elyash, whatever. Yeah, I don't have to tell you. Obviously, the modern. But believe me, I could find somebody from Ponovich who would give this shiur extremely differently than Rabbi Schwat. I'm not doing that, but different people have totally different views, and you can that's just the way, especially on this issue. And maybe it's unfortunate.
I know that Rabbi Kelman enjoys history. You mentioned, so I'll point out something that I learned not too long ago. I mentioned that sefer of reviving the Sanhedrin by Rav Maimon, and in the audience was a grandson of Rav Maimon who wrote the Sefer.
Okay.
So I said, what, your grandfather was the one who wrote the Declaration of Independence? He said, no. Make a long story short, there were two Rav Maimons in Yerushalayim. Both of them in the 1950s wrote parallel Sfarim on reviving the Sanhedrin Bizman Hazeh, according to the Rambam.
Really?
So don't confuse that there are two books by two totally different Rav Maimons. The but other
not,
one
not Yehuda Leib. The other one wasn't Yehuda Leib, I assume.
Correct.
But by the way, I'm Svi Yehuda, and my cousins are Yehuda are Leib. You know, that's my grandfather. I'm named after, so I guess Tzvi Yehuda cook. I mean, it depends, you know, when people look to Tzvi Yehuda. Okay. Any other comments or questions? I'm glad we do this after the shiur, so those who don't want to listen can don't have to stay. But all right, this evening, Mark Shapiro. We've been talking about his letters with the wide range of rabbis, as you know, those who come. A fascinating shiur, always his discussion from the spectrum of the rabbinic world, his letters to Gedolei Israel. And then tomorrow, Ora Wiskin on Chassidut at 11 a.m. and 1:30, Ilana Sachs-Goldstein, Ilana Goldstein-Sachs on Megillat Ruth. Wednesday, Marty Lakshin on Midrash Halacha Amshat and Lori Novak on Women in Kriyat HaTorah. That's 11 and 12:15. And the Haftorah Shir at 8 o'clock by Moshe Sokolov. Thursday morning, Shuli Mishkin and continuing her Shir on the State of Israel, Modern State of Israel. And at 8:30, Rebecca Winter will be giving the Parsha Shir, and I'll be giving the Pirkei Avot Shir at 9:30. So that wraps up the rest of the week. Rabbi Schwad, a pleasure to actually hear you live this week, now that my teaching schedule allows me to come, and look forward to seeing you next week. And I thank you for all the sources. I feel bad, maybe I don't have a chance to get through all the sources inside, but hopefully people can take a look at them afterwards. And thank you very much, and thank you all for coming, and have a wonderful
pleasure.
Day.
Shalom, shalom,
have a wonderful week, everybody. Thank you.